Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Rob Schneider.
I'm Kevin David Thomas.
And this is Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends. Our guest this week is the definition of a Broadway gypsy. Not only was she in the ensemble of such hits as Peter Pan with Sandy Duncan in the original Broadway production of La Cage aux Folles, she also performed in Bob Fosse's Dancin' and was a staple of the infamous Milligan Breakfast Show in the 70s and 80s.
As if that wasn't impressive enough, our guest was in five of the most notorious flops in Broadway history. King of Hearts, Carmelina, Copperfield, Merlin, and Teddy and Alice.
To tell us what it was like to work with such legends as Bob Fosse, Ron Field, Georgia Brown, and Cheetah Rivera, here is the one and only Spence Ford.
Oh, hello, Rob and Kevin.
Hi, Spence. Thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
So, Spence, I'm so curious, what exactly was the Milligan Breakfast Show? Because it's not around anymore. So what exactly was that?
It was the granddaddy of all industrials. Instead of pouring a lot of money into commercials for television or infomercials, they had a whole section of their company that would design and create a stage presentation of their new products, their new materials, their new fabrics, and used Broadway gypsies to perform numbers, musical numbers, to wear the clothes and also demonstrate how easily the clothes could be washed. Oh, I have some funny stories.
Oh, yeah.
The Milligan Breakfast Show, they usually hired, I think it was 16 female Broadway gypsies and 12 men. I could be wrong on the numbers.
Did you audition for this?
Oh, my gosh. It was huge to audition for it, right.
But was it a good paycheck? Is that why everyone wanted to do it?
Huge paycheck. Okay. Right. Wow. And they wanted people who were currently working on Broadway. So they wanted people who already had matinees and, six evening shows a week.
Yeah.
And they would work around your schedule. And they treated you like royalty. And fabulous choreographers would stage these numbers. And fabulous stars would be the headliners. So the first year I did it, Donna McKechnie was in it. Ann Miller was in it.
Oh, my gosh.
Gregory Hines, Dorothy Loudon.
Oh, my gosh.
Phyllis Diller.
Phyllis Diller did one.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Yeah. And so we would rehearse.
Right.
And on a normal day when you didn't have a matinee, you would rehearse from like 9 in the morning until 5.
Right.
And in the morning when you came into rehearsals, there would be a long tables with huge urns, silver urns of coffee and tea, water, and Danish, big trays of Danish, and fruit, big bowls of fruit, all this kind of fruit. And then at lunch break, you'd come back from lunch, and there would be these enormous boxes of chocolates for us.
A bunch of dancers.
I mean, I enjoyed them. Yeah. I don't know if some of the other dancers didn't, but I'd be like putting them in my dance bag. And then on matinee days, each dancer who was on a Broadway show, and like I said, most of the cast was, they would provide a limo to take you to your stage door in plenty of time for you to be ready for your show.
That's fancy.
And the rehearsals were for 4 weeks, and then the performances happened in the Waldorf Astoria Ballroom.
Ooh.
And they were performed basically for a breakfast show. So they were having all of their salespeople from all over the country come, and the breakfast show would be at 7:30 in the morning.
Right.
Or I think 7:30 was our half hour. That's so our performance would start at 8 a.m. Oh, yeah, our call was 7 a.m.
And how long was the show itself?
Maybe an hour.
Right. And was it all original music?
It was not original music. They would take songs and change the lyrics to make them about the material.
Oh, that's brilliant.
I just remember one. You're going to tell me the name of the Stevie Wonder song, and it was about this fabric called Visa. Visa hugs you all over. Visa hugs you all over. Da, da, da. Da, da, da. And Donna McKechnie was the one dancing that number, backed by all of us. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And in between these numbers, this is an example of the kind of thing they would do. 1 year I was involved in what they call the commercial. I did three of these things. After the big opening number, they wheeled on this set piece that had three working sinks with running water.
Ooh, and technology.
I had on a blue one shoulder. They're all... They were all polyester fabrics, right?
The 70s, right?
Right. Yeah, okay. I did the show in 78, 79, and 80.
Okay.
And then each one of us, I think I had the big squirt bottle of mustard, and we had to squirt ourselves with mustard, the girl next to me with ketchup, and the other girl with mayonnaise.
With real mustard and ketchup.
Oh, yeah.
And just like, oh.
In front of all these people. And then take off your dress. And underneath, you're underdressed with
right,
a leotard.
Of course. Yeah.
And then put that dress into your sink and swish it around, and just pull it up, and it was clean.
Oh,
my
God.
It would just show you the magic of polyester how easy it was to clean. Very, very funny stuff.
Oh, my goodness.
So now, what got you in to theater? Obviously, it wasn't the dream to be in the Milligan Breakfast Show. I mean,
no.
that was up there, but...
I started dancing when I was 7. Uh-huh. And I loved dancing. I mean, my mother had that classic choice. You know, she knew she was either going to give me piano lessons or dance lessons. But every Sunday when Ed Sullivan's show was on, guess what? I was dancing around in front of the living room. So she decided to give me dance, which I'm forever grateful.
Oh, of course.
So I started dance at 7, and I took ballet. And then the next year we added acrobatics. And in my 5th year of studying, my mother got real smart. She didn't want me sitting around on my butt doing nothing over the summer. And there was another teacher in town who was doing a summer ballet for the Parks and Rec program that was going to be in an outdoor amphitheater.
Oh.
And they were doing Sleeping Beauty. And I was 10, and I was... So it wasn't my 5th year of dance. It was like my 4th year. Mm-hmm. Anyway, my mother literally dragged me out of bed and put the tights on me. Because I decided Saturday morning I wanted to sleep in, and she's like, "No, you're going.
You're dancing."
And wow. I got cast, and I fell in love with that teacher.
Wow.
And then my mother, in her wisdom, realized that I needed to switch studios, that she was a much better teacher, and she was the teacher that provided for her students the ability to come to New York and study in the summers if the parents would approve.
Oh, know? My gosh.
So when I was 13, I started coming to New York for a week with her. We'd stay at this wonderful old hotel on 57th Street, the Great Northern Hotel, which no longer exists. And we would eat at the Automat, and we would take dance classes, and dance classes were $2.50 a piece.
Ooh. That's a good
deal. Do you remember this teacher's name?
Oh, gosh. I studied for many teachers. Phil Black was one of the ones, and Charles Kelly. They both taught jazz, and Phil also taught acrobatics and tap. Uh-huh. And I would take ballet at the International School, which was based inside Carnegie Hall. But I can't remember the names of the teachers. But I did take from some of the old ballet teachers, Dubodowski, and now I'm going to totally ruin their names. But anyways, you know, very, very old school Russian ballet teachers. And I took... Charles Kelly taught in the studios, second floor, fourth floor, over the Ed Sullivan Theater, which is now, of course, is the...
Colbert, right?
Right,
Colbert's
the late night.
Yeah.
Stephen Colbert.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
And I took class with an acrobatic teacher in that same building, lower studio. The studio was so small, you had to go outside in the hall to run in to do your aerial tricks. And his mats were just like like a couple of tea towels sewn together.
Oh, brilliant!
Yeah, over on linoleum.
Very safe.
On linoleum, right?
Different time.
Yeah, exactly.
Different time.
My gosh.
So, when did you move to New York officially? How old were you when you first moved?
I did 1 year of university at University of Virginia, and I realized I really wanted to try to be on Broadway, to dance on Broadway, because coming up to study with my teacher, we would always go see Broadway shows. You know, we'd sit in the very back row of the highest balcony.
What was your first Broadway show?
My very first Broadway show was Hallelujah Baby with Leslie Uggams.
Oh, my gosh.
Great first Broadway show.
I know. Wow. I'd love to see a revival of that.
Oh,
okay.
I think
put it out
all
there.
Would. I think we all would.
Some great music in there.
Great score. It's a great score.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
So that was the first one.
And then after 1 year at UVA,
my
best friend, I had a summer job working at a theater, historical theater piece on the college of, on the campus of the College of William and Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia. She was graduating from William and Mary in dance, and she was determined to be in the Merce Cunningham Company, and she was moving to New York. And one night we sat up all night talking, and I said, I'm coming with you.
That's scary, but good for you.
And I told my parents, and then they freaked.
Because you were how old again? You were...
At that point, I was 18.
18.
Okay. But still.
18
still,
New York City, and
And I mean, they were lower middle class. Neither of my parents had graduated from college, and they were very disappointed, and they thought I would end up living on the street. And my father was very afraid that I would get in trouble with the mafia.
So specific, very specific.
I think
concern.
He was watching a lot of the, you know, Frank Sinatra, those movies. What do they call them? The Rat Pack?
Yes,
the Rat Pack,
yeah. So anyway, we came up to New York and we lived in the YWCA at 51st and 8th Avenue, which is now, ironically, has become a retirement home.
That's
so I
amazing.
Could move back and it could be like full circle.
Full circle. And what year was that when you first came to
73.
New York?
The fall of 73.
Yeah. Incredible.
And my first goal was to get a job at Radio City in the ballet company. Because I could.
The ballet company.
Oh, this was back when Radio City showed movies. Okay.
Oh.
So in between each showing of the movie would be about a 20 to 30 minute show.
Yeah.
And they would feature, of course, the Rockettes.
Uh-huh.
And then there would be a ballet company. They would do one, at least one huge dance extravaganza, you know. And I had been to Radio City many times. And I knew I can do fouetté turns to the right and the left, 16. And I could do triple pirouettes on point to the right and the left and hops on point, you know. So I knew I've got the goods, right? And I thought, well, this is my ace in the hole. So I go and I audition and I do all my great stuff. And at the end, they said, thank you. And I found myself at the stage door on 50th Street. That was before they used the 51st Street stage door.
Uh-huh.
And I walked out. Now, this is before Chorus Line. Yeah. But I swear, I heard the voice in my brain say, fuck you, Radio City. I'm going to go dance on Broadway.
Yes! And you did.
And I immediately went down to interview with this company and got my first waitressing job. Ba-dum-bum.
At the same day.
There we go. No, wait, so when was the first Broadway show? When was the first Broadway show?
The first Broadway show was 1978, King of Hearts, at the Minskoff Theater.
At the Minskoff Theater. And who directed that?
Ron Field did the choreography and the direction. Now, I had done the out-of-town tryout for that the summer before up at Westport Playhouse.
Oh, yeah.
And that was directed by A.J. Antoon and choreographed by... Oh, see, this is when my brain starts failing me. And I love him. He was a dancer with Alvin Ailey. And it'll come to me before long.
But A.J. Antoon, I mean, that was a great director because he
that
did a whole bunch of...
championship season.
Yeah,
he won a Tony
Promises,
for.
Promises. That's I think he also...
Oh, really?
Directed.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And a brilliant, brilliant director and died much too soon.
Mm-hmm.
Much too soon, but brilliant, brilliant guy. So what was the story of King of Hearts? I mean, what was the actual plot? Of
the
musical,
plot?
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that really intrigues me about it is that it was based on this cult movie. It was a French movie, Le Roi du Coeur, and it's about World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan Bates plays a British soldier who is young, and he's in charge of the homing pigeons.
Mm-hmm.
And they send him into this little French town to scout around and see what the Germans are up to, and then send a pigeon message back, and he discovers that the Germans have gotten the town evacuated, and they planted all these bombs to sabotage the incoming Allied troops. And but the people, when they vacated the town, they forgot about the inmates in the asylum, and the inmates of the asylum of St. Anne's get out, and they resume their former lives. There's a priest, and there's a madam, and there's a barber, and there's a young woman who wants to be a tightrope walker and ballet dancer. And so the musical, they made it American. It was still World War I, but they made the serviceman an American. Mm-hmm. And in the out-of-town tryout, it was Robbie Benson.
Oh, wow.
And of course, on Broadway, I'm totally blanking on his name. This is why I wanted to find the program.
It's Don Scardino.
Oh, Don That's Scardino. Right. I love mm-hmm. him.
Who's a mm-hmm. very wonderful television director
and
now.
He's, right. He's currently working in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
right.
he's a busy man. He's
so
a busy
with
man.
Don, if you're listening, I apologize. It's just my senior moment.
Do you know why they went from Robbie Benson to Don Scardino? And where Robbie Benson was up and coming at that point, right? I can't
he
remember.
He had done
the,
many movies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What's the big movie that he did, the ice skating one? Do you know what I'm talking
about? I know Ice
you know
Castles.
I mean?
Ice Castles?
That's, okay. Yeah. Had he done that? Or is this mm-hmm. before? Okay, great. Okay.
Yeah. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I was in the ensemble of the original out-of-town tryout. Right. And when they had the auditions for the Broadway production and Ron Field of Cabaret fame.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Bob Fosse did choreograph the Broadway show. Ron Field had the auditions, and he hired three men from that original production. Tony Mendez, who played the maitre d', mm-hmm. and Gordon Weiss, who played the barber, and Michael McCarty, who played the priest, and me.
Oh.
And I was cast...
the only female.
The only female.
The only female.
And I was cast to swing the six major insane women.
Wow.
So I was also named dance captain. Now, I didn't know Ron Field at all, but I had worked with one of his proteges in my non-union days, so mm-hmm. I knew of him. And it was quite a learning experience
your
to work
Broadway
with
show,
that man.
You were dance captain and covering all those parts. It's
oh,
incredible.
My gosh. Oh, and get this. When he was setting, I'll never forget this, when he was setting the very big dance number in Act One, he locked everyone out of the studio, including me, while he was creating because of his insecurities. And I'm out in the hall with my notebook, like, thinking, how in the world am I supposed to learn all these parts?
Yeah.
You know, because this is not a chorus number where everybody dances alike.
Right.
These are individuals.
Six individual tracks
characters.
You have to follow.
Yeah. Well, not just my six.
Yeah.
I'm dance captain. I have to know what
to know
all the men are, everybody's doing. And after he completed the number, he unlocked the door. You know, this is hours and hours later, like a whole day you're sitting in the hall. I come in and I was a mad woman, just a mad woman making little diagrams and X's and, you know.
That's incredible.
It was insane.
That's incredible.
The whole process. We tried out in Boston.
Uh-huh.
And I just have to say, I mean, it was a huge learning experience of how to build a thick skin.
Oh, yeah?
Because he would, out of the blue, come down on you for something that you had no idea that was so offensive. And he was very rude.
Oh, my.
Right. Callously rude.
Did it affect the room then, everybody?
I mean, ooh, yes.
Because I find when it's top down like that, it can really affect the mood of the whole situation.
It was quite a...
Oh, wow.
There are many stories, and I feel
Was everyone surprised that it closed a little soon? That it
did
we know going into it that maybe this wasn't
great
going
question.
To
the
last?
Show the show itself was excellent.
Yeah.
Okay?
There's a cast recording of it, too, yeah.
And Peter Link wrote the
Peter
music,
Link.
And
right.
I adore Peter's work. As soon as we opened, there was a newspaper strike.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh,
so we
show.
Were canvassing the TKTS lines with, you know, pamphlets. But it really was, I mean, my impression of it at my young age was that we had to close because of lack of the press.
Mm-hmm.
You know? How old were you when this was happening? Do you remember?
Was I 24? I think I was 24.
Wow. That's I mean, 24, dance captain. Only
Not
one,
bad.
Only female brought over from the tryout. Yeah. That's so impressive. You know, a lot of times when you hear this show mentioned, the sets, Santa Loquasto sets are always mentioned.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about these sets, which everyone talks about.
Well, the set was one enormous sculpture that rotated, as it was explained to me, on a golf cart motor. and I'm sure it was slightly more powerful than a golf cart motor. But as it rotated, you would see the audience in a proscenium theater would see a different aspect or the interior of a building of the town.
Wow.
And it was just, it was magical.
Oh, yeah.
And it had second levels and, you know, it was very French. but it also was huge. So it dwarfed the actors. And the Minskoff Theater is huge.
It's a big theater.
Huge.
Yeah.
And the story is a very intimate story. And ultimately, it's an anti-war piece.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the movie.
The movie, I remember the movie is very much like that.
At the end of the movie, when he makes a choice, do I go back to the mad world or do I go live with the mad, insane people in their asylum?
Yeah.
And he makes a choice to live in the asylum.
Wow.
You know, I was reading somewhere that Ron Field had said that the reason that the show was not successful, for him at least, was the sets. He felt that the show was beautiful, but the sets ruined everything. Do you feel that that's the... I mean, that's the quote. I mean, do you feel that's the case? That
I think that's a little harsh.
Yeah.
I think that, personally, I think that if the show had been installed in a smaller theater, which would, of course, necessitated a less huge set... Mm. It would have allowed the audience to have more of an intimate experience with the story and with the cast.
Yeah.
What's next for you?
Well, that was right before Christmas of 98.
Didn't even make it through Christmas.
78.
Merry Christmas.
Wow. Yeah,
Merry
Christmas.
Show's closing. Merry Christmas.
We have time to party.
Yeah.
Okay, so then somehow I auditioned. Oh, and because of my work, my time at Radio City... I had done three shows at Radio City for the Bicentennial, choreographed by Peter Gennaro.
Oh.
Okay? Peter Gennaro, who was in the original West Side Story and just amazing human being. He was choreographing a Broadway show called Carmelina that was going to be...
Carmelina.
Yeah.
I love the score to Carmelina.
It's good.
And I auditioned, and I thought maybe I might have an in, and I guess I did. He cast me. So I was in the ensemble of that show. And his daughter is in the show, too, Liza Gennaro.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is wonderful friendship. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's teaching in a university now. I think she's at Indiana, but I don't know if she's still there.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
But she's
very
teaching.
Talented. Whoa, this woman.
What was it like working on this show? So for our listeners, a little plot synopsis. What is this show about?
Oh, Carmelina is Mamma Mia. In Italy.
It's Mamma Mia. Mamma Mia goes to Italy.
It's the story of Mamma Mia. A girl doesn't know who her father is, and she invites them all to come over and figure out who it is.
It's based on a film, though, right?
It's based on a film that Gina Lola Brigido was in.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I can't remember. The Three Loves of... I can't remember the
Something
name
Mrs.
of it.
Campbell. Buenos Aires, Mrs. Campbell?
Buenos Aires, Mrs. Campbell.
These are so good.
Well,
I think you did some research.
You know. So tell me about this show, because on paper, well, I mean, obviously Mamma Mia is such a huge success, so the story
and
works.
And you have good writers for Carmelina.
Oh, yeah. Who wrote the score for Carmelina?
Alan J. Lerner.
Yeah.
And the first day of rehearsal, of course, I knew who he was. I still feel like I was so young, you know. The first day of rehearsal, he read through the entire script and sang every song and played every song for us. And I was amazed at this man whose his hair was red and it stuck straight up. And I thought, this man looks like he just stuck his finger in a electric
like
socket.
It was, like, styled that
yes,
way? Like
yes, it was styled straight up, right?
Like so a crew cut. He sang through
and so he sits you all down and says, listen to me, and he sings and he reads.
We're going to do a read-through of the show, but... I'm going to do all of it.
He did it, yeah. And Burton, I think Burton Lane did the
lyrics. Burton Lane and Joe Stein, I think.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It was.
That is an incredible image.
And I just loved working on it. I loved working with Peter so much. And we did our out-of-town tryout at the Kennedy Center in D.C. And... just wonderful people to work with. Georgia Brown was lovely.
Opera singer?
Georgia Brown was the original.
No, the fellow.
Cesare Siepe.
Wait, say that again. You said that's so
nice. Cesare Siepe.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Yes. I like that.
And Cesare had a wonderful operatic approach to his singing, of course, because that's where he came from. And there was a song in the first act when he was singing his love for Mrs. Campbell, the main character. And the lyric is, only a sunbeam could feel as I do. Only a sunbeam. Mm-hmm. Which is a great lyric.
It is, actually.
And we would listen off stage. Oh. And I'm so sorry, but it sounded to our ears like, only a zombie could feel like I do.
Nailing it, Chaser.
How romantic.
Oh, my God.
How romantic. But, who is the director on this?
Jose Ferrer. Oh.
The great actor.
The great
actor,
director of
Cyrano
musicals.
Bergeron, the great director of musicals. What he was known for, right?
Definitely.
What was it like getting directed by somebody who was not known necessarily for directing
musical
theater?
Oh my gosh. It didn't matter if he'd never seen a musical before, you know. I mean, I felt utmost respect for this man, you know. And I had barely seen anything he'd ever done, but you just hear that name and this is a man, you know, who carries weight.
Yes.
And I really enjoyed working with him. I have one little regret. They had not cast an understudy for the young woman who plays, you know, the daughter.
Yeah, Josie de Guzman.
Josie de Guzman. And so they read. He read all of the ensemble ladies to be understudy, and he actually now. And I don't mean this as a criticism. It's just. I appreciate that he was being honest with me. I think he was being honest. He put his arm around me and he said, "My darling, you're the best, but I'm going to give it to the young woman who's the swing so that she has something else to work on." And I thought, really? Really?
Really?
Oh my gosh.
That's nice.
Yeah. I mean, I just wanted to understudy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
What a great thing that would have been. But... and I'm sorry that I no longer can remember the name of the lady who was the swing, but you know,
Meryl Streep. It was Meryl Streep.
Oh my gosh, wouldn't that be great?
Nice, good career. This show, 17 performances, and then
praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater. SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
It's over.
It was that many?
Yeah. 17.
Is that many?
Oh, I think it was Copperfield. It was only 12. I don't know.
Was that
better.
Your next one?
No. And the third one, I hit gold.
Oh, yeah?
But I didn't get to open in it. I replaced in Peter Pan.
Oh, great.
And in between Peter Pan and Danson, there was Copperfield. And Copperfield was Rob Iskov. Huh. And it was sort of balletic, and that was another big, Copperfield. It's a huge story, and it had 12 performances.
Iconic. But...
And then when I auditioned for Danson, that was my, I had auditioned for Danson 7 times.
Really?
And I'd always get down to the end, and I wouldn't get hired. And I had been a member of the American Dance Machine.
Oh, wow.
Way before they were paying anybody to do anything. And I had worked with Graziella Danielle. I'd worked with other Fosse people, and they all said, Fosse's going to love you. Well, he didn't love me.
Really?
I auditioned for Pippin. I auditioned for Chicago repeatedly. And then Danson. I mean, I felt like, what do you want, my firstborn son?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I actually, that's when I started my Buddhist practice. And it just, I don't, you know, how to explain it. But once I started my Buddhist practice, it was about a couple of months later, I got a phone call from the casting director asking me if I was available.
It worked?
And I was numb. I was like, I'm available.
Really? Yeah.
I'm available. I still had to go in and dance with 3 other people, but they hired me. And I was that show changed my life. learning his style, learning how to do his style with ease and without any unnecessary tension.
Right.
Because I carried a lot of tension in my upper body, my neck and my shoulders. And I was so injured for the first couple of months with, you know, when you're hitting dance moves. And then like the next morning, I'll never forget this one morning, I was taking a shower and washing my hair and I put my head back and I couldn't move my head. I was stuck.
Oh my God.
And I had to call in and say, I can't do the show. And of course, when you don't perform, you don't get paid. I mean, you get one sick day a month.
Oh my God.
But if you're, you know, sort of paralyzed or crippled, you know, you can't, you only get that one day off, and then your pay gets docked. So it behooves you to be well, right?
Yeah.
And so I had to learn how to negotiate the choreography, and it was the best maturing process for the craft, you know. And I was working with awesome people.
I was going to ask you, who taught you his style? I
mean, Chet Walker.
Chet Walker.
Who's still, I mean, he's choreographing still.
Yeah.
I mean,
Chet Walker is amazing. Yeah. And he's so thorough, and he knows what he's talking about, and he's worked so much with Fosse, side by side with him.
Yeah.
And he is, he's a taskmaster.
Oh, yeah.
You know? But we did have, I know I had at least one rehearsal day with Mr. Fosse himself. Mm-hmm. He was working on Little Me across the street, and we were in the Ambassador Theater, and the whispers were around the cast, like, you know, Bob is in the back of the house tonight. And then we were called for a rehearsal at City Center the next week, and we had an 8-hour rehearsal that I will never forget. I swear, I don't think we went over more than maybe 16 bars of dance.
What?
In the entire day. He was so specific, and we had to repeat. And I was so nervous that you don't want to be the one who makes the entire cast have to redo that section.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my gosh, the pressure. Every time you start to 5, 6, 7, 8.
But I was, oh, my gosh, so happy to be working in with his style. Oh, and when he came backstage that night, the night he dropped in on us, he came backstage to each dressing room to say hi.
Oh.
And I was at the door of my dressing room. I shared with five other great ladies. Yeah. And he looked at me and he said, "Well, Spence, you finally got into one of my shows." And if I had had a presence of mind, I would have said, "Well, I hope you are pleased." Mm-hmm. But of course, I didn't. I was so nervous.
That's
Mr. Fosse.
But you did. You did get in it. And then they took you to London.
Yes. After when Merlin closed.
Yeah.
Right on the heels of Merlin, and I had just been understudying Cheetah Rivera in that, playing the Evil Queen.
Not bad.
And of course, no one ever expects Cheetah to miss, because actually Cheetah, in her entire career, has never missed an unscheduled performance, except for in Merlin. And this story, I was scheduled to watch. It was a matinee on a Saturday, and I was scheduled to watch as dance captain and take notes on the show. So the swing was going to go on for my part. And so now you have to remember, this is before cell phones.
Yeah.
So before the show, I don't come in early. I have to do is just sit in the audience. So I'm walking around. I got coffee and a bagel. I'm in Central Park hanging. I finally get to the show at 1:30, at half hour. Mm-hmm. I walk in, and the stage managers tackle me, and they're like, "Where have you been?" And I said, and they said, "You're on." And I said, "For who?"
Oh, my God.
And they said, "For Cheetah." And I was like, oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
They had no costumes for me. Everything had been designed by Theoni Aldridge. It was spandex, luckily, because I was 3 inches taller than Cheetah. And they had just gotten a whole bunch of T-strap shoes from Capizio and just sprayed them the right color and glued some jewels on them. They quickly ran me through all of the magic tricks, because I had to turn a panther into a woman. And I had to turn into stone. And there was so much magic in the show with Doug Henning. And then I'm standing up on this huge set piece, and the curtain's getting ready to go up, and you hear that announcement: "At this performance, the role of the Evil Queen, usually played by Cheetah Rivera, will be played by Spence Ford." And the awes boo. And I'm standing backstage just like, oh, please, give me a chance. Just give me a chance. Please be forgiving.
And then how did it go?
Yeah, how did it go?
Well, There were moments when I was
sure.
There were moments.
First time doing it with all the set pieces and with all the costumes.
There were moments when I was looking at Doug Henning and thinking, "I know what you want, and I know I'm not giving it to you, and I don't know what I'm supposed to say." But I made up something.
That's incredible. Okay, so let's talk about Merlin, because this is notorious.
Merlin was very big, and there were huge tricks in it, and there was very complicated magic, and of course we all had to sign riders.
I was going to ask you that. It was all very secretive.
We can't divulge how the tricks are done, and I was involved in a couple of big ones. Because in one, they needed somebody who was small enough to get in the thing and strong enough to be able to manipulate the thing, you know. So, I was actually inside the Black Knight, which is the creature that the evil queen, Chita Rivera, creates to battle the puny young Merlin. And anyway... So I was Black Knight.
I wish I could see that, actually.
If I had a time machine, I would love to go back and see this. Now, is it true that one of the shows was canceled because there was a snowstorm and animals couldn't come into the theater?
There were so many animals in the show.
There were animals in the show?
Oh, yeah. There were ducks. Oh, part of the magic. There was a small pony.
Oh.
They had this.
I love a small pony.
There was a pony that was on stage, and then it appeared on a box hanging above the, not the audience, but up left. You know, I mean. Yeah. I don't know how that trick was done.
Oh, my goodness.
What other animal? Oh, the leopard. The black leopard. The panther. Black panther.
Yeah.
Anyway, there were a lot of animals, and the animals came from one particular organization in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And we had this major snowstorm. This was in the winter of 83.
Yeah.
And they just couldn't get the animals into the city. So the audience is sitting there, and Doug gives the curtain speech that everyone's tickets will be refunded, and please come back another day because we can't do the show without the animals.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so.
The show did not go on.
Oh, and another thing, I don't know if you know this, that we started rehearsals on the show in, September, and we were supposed to open in December. Mm-hmm. The opening night was postponed 5 times. We were in 10 out of 12s for 2 months.
Dance of the Vampires.
Tech rehearsals for 2 months.
Mm-hmm. And while we were in tech rehearsals, for example, we would do a matinee on a Sunday. We'd have rehearsal before, do a matinee, and have rehearsal after for 5 hours.
That's crazy.
And they were doing rewrites, and we were learning new songs and doing new choreography while we're doing the old version at night.
Who did the music? Is it Elmer Bernstein?
Elmer Bernstein and Don Black, did the lyrics for
it. Interesting.
Do you remember who the director was?
Is it Ron Field or no?
No.
Ron was not involved. No, I don't know. Oh, Reitman. Ivan Reitman.
Ivan Reitman ended up.
Is he a movie?
He was the producer of Animal House, and he ended up being the director of Merlin. But the original director was British, and I was so hoping that you would remember his name.
No, I don't.
And the original choreographer was Ron Field.
Ron Field,
he was
the original choreographer.
Fired after 2 weeks.
Oh,
after
wow.
2 weeks.
Okay, now
why?
This is my third show with him.
Yeah.
Okay. Because when I did Peter Pan, Ron had taken over to Dr. Peter Pan, Ron hired me.
Oh, wow.
And he paid me an enormous compliment when he was holding the initial auditions for Merlin.
Yeah.
He told me later, I had no idea that he liked my talent. Yeah. I had no idea. There was no way to tell from him. But he said, when you walked in, when you showed up for the auditions, you were my standard. And
what
I was like, whoa.
That's actually really nice. Yeah.
And so we had quite a topsy-turvy experience in the rehearsal process. Ron was fired. They brought in, I want to say his name is Billy Wilson from L.A. And mm-hmm. then we ended up with Chad Chris Chadman and Wayne Cilento doing choreography. So it was a lot of different styles, and actually we had a joke that Ivan Reitman would get a nosebleed after 8 bars of dance. So he just kept cutting dance sections.
So what just wasn't working? What wasn't working? This sounds like it could... I mean, the story itself is theatrical.
Well, it ran 6 months.
Yeah.
I felt like it was a success. But I think it cost so much.
Pricey, yeah.
It was, isn't it the biggest financial flop?
I think it was one of the biggest.
Next to Carrie.
That's oh, right. Really?
I was so annoyed when Carrie opened and closed. I was doing a tour of Cats and I missed it. And I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I was in the biggest flop on Broadway. Damn it.
How dare you,
Carrie?
That's right.
So right now, also, the cast, though, of Merlin. I mean, obviously you have Cheetah Rivera, who's a legend.
Yeah.
But Nathan Lane.
Nathan Lane.
Is in it.
He was not a happy camper.
Well, I mean, I don't want to say nothing's
well,
changed,
I mean,
but
he has a very, because I've heard people interview him about that, and he has a very great line, which is he goes, Doug Henning was an amazing magician. He could make a whole audience disappear.
He's a wonderful comic. I love him.
Funny.
I love him.
And was Christian Slater?
Christian Slater was the very young Merlin.
Young Merlin.
Yeah, and guess what? Hmm. He was in Copperfield.
He was the
understudy to the young David Copperfield.
So wait, wow. Copperfield was what, about 2 years before this, 3 years before this?
Oh my gosh, don't ask me that way. All I know 81? Is that Copperfield was after Peter Pan. So it was 81. You're right.
So Copperfield, David Copperfield, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
And so
right.
What was going on with this show? What it sounds like it should have been.
Too much, too much story.
Well, Dickens is dense.
And I personally cannot remember any of the music from that. I can't even remember
that's
who
great,
did it.
That's a great.
Isn't that terrible?
It's Al Kasha and Joel Hirshhorn.
Oh, the
great
writers. Yes.
Yes, those greats, the great team of Kasha and Hirshhorn.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a deli, doesn't it?
Terrible. I mean, I'm sure it was. They were lovely.
But you were
talent.
In the show, and you heard it every day, and you don't remember any of the scores. So
it was. It was a very traumatic time in my life, though. If this can be any excuse to Kasher and Hirshhorn listening out there,
yes.
In Radio Land. What are we on?
Podcast Land.
I was going through divorce, and it was really traumatic. So I really had a tough time remembering. And then my dance partner got fired from the show a week before we opened.
From Copperfield.
And we had major lifts, and I was wearing a 30-pound costume, and I felt like he was unfairly fired. And they fired him by calling him at home on his day off on his birthday.
Oh my God.
No one should be fired like that.
Who was the director and choreographer?
Rob Iskov.
Rob Iskov.
Yeah.
Said that.
Yeah.
What else? I'm unfamiliar with the name. I don't know what else he's done.
He's done a lot of Vegas and a lot of things out in California.
Oh, interesting. I wonder why he would be a Copperfield.
I think he was Canadian, too.
Those Canadians, they're not nice.
You know, he is Canadian.
You know those.
I don't think he had anything to do with it.
Okay. Oh, all right.
That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think it was producers.
Interesting.
And Copperfield runs a very lucky 13 performances.
13
unlucky
performances.
13
performances. Oh, I thought it was 12. Oh, my gosh. Wow.
I haven't. Well, we gave you an extra one.
I'm trusting you.
For kindness.
Wow.
Okay, so you do that. Then it goes to Merlin.
Yeah.
That's its own thing. What happens after Merlin? Where are you going next?
I remember being in the Mark Hellinger Theater, which after Merlin, it got bought or rented by the church, whatever church that is. And it's so I'm so sad that theater that has so many warm memories for me has never been a theater since then.
You can still go in and look at it. And
you
can walk in. It's a church, but they've maintained all of the glass and all of the church.
Oh,
it's the church.
Okay.
Yeah.
Theater is still pristine. But you walk in and you just feel the ghosts.
I have major memories in my head.
And Legs Diamond, I think, was one of the last shows.
They did a few shows after Merlin in there.
It seemed
like, unfortunately, a very unlucky house for whatever reason.
Was.
And then it got sold to this church.
I thought that Seesaw played there. Maybe that was too long ago to be lucky.
I think there were some hits that were in there, but something in the 80s, I don't know, because it was that, and I think Grind might have been in there, I think. And so, that's okay.
Well, I can remember being at the stage door entrance. It was a payphone, and I was returning a call to somebody. I think it was Gail Benedict.
Mm-hmm.
Gail Benedict was in the original company of Danson.
Mm.
And she was putting together a tour, a company of Danson that would go to London.
Mm.
And before it went to London, it would do a two-month tour, basically to get us all seasoned together.
Yeah, that's right.
And I accepted. I mean, I would have jumped through anything to work on the Fosse material again, any kind of Fosse show. And a couple of my friends really thought I'd made a mistake, that I had just gone on for Cheetah mm-hmm. Rivera on Broadway. What was I doing leaving town? Not just leaving town, leaving the country.
Right.
And I just thought, you know what? I want to go to London,
oh,
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the first things we got to do in London was we performed. Every fall, they do this thing called the Royal Command Performance mm-hmm. for the Queen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's held in the Drury Lane Theater. And that's where Danson was going into. So oh. we were in the host theater.
Oh, yeah.
And the stage is raked, like a lot of European stages, yeah. Which added a little extra difficulty mm-hmm. to the Fosse choreography. And we're going to be doing the Dancing Man, the tribute to Bob Fosse number. And that was what we did, like, the very first week we were in London. And guess, oh, my gosh, tremendous memory. Not only did I get to meet the Queen, Gene Kelly was the MC.
What?
Oh, my gosh.
And I went up to him backstage and introduced myself and then immediately burst into tears.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So Gene Kelly and Queen Elizabeth.
In one day.
And you're dancing Bob Fosse's material.
Why not?
Like,
in the Drury Lane Theater.
God. It was amazing.
You know, I have to ask you, is there any choreographer that you really wished you could have worked with that you didn't get the chance to work with firsthand? I mean, you've got Bob Fosse, you've got Ron Field, Peter Gennaro, you've got so many great ones.
Good question.
Well, I would love to work with any choreographer, all of them. I mean, I remember being able to go to see Agnes DeMille give lectures on her work at Hunter College.
Wow.
And I had a friend who was part of the troupe that would demonstrate her work. And I just missed by a hair an opportunity of working with her and working with Jerome Robbins. My ex-husband got to work with him doing a play at the... Oh, what's that? The tiny little theater in the bottom of Lincoln Center.
Mitzi Newhouse.
And I went to see, but there was very little movement in it. But oh my gosh, I would have loved to have experienced. Yeah. I mean, I've heard many stories.
Notorious as well.
But I want to tell my own, you know.
Right.
But I did. I got to work with so many great people. There was one choreographer. Are you familiar with Betsy Haug?
No, I'm not.
Betsy Haug was a very Vegas kind of jazz person.
Uh-huh.
And there was an audition for her show, and now I can't think of the name of it. Maybe it was Grind. But I went and took a class with her, and I felt the most awkward person on the planet. I mean, because her style was so different from anything I had done.
Oh, yeah.
I felt like, oh my God, I've got to learn how to walk again, you know.
Really?
But,
that different from anyone else?
Oh my gosh, because it was not ballet based.
Right.
It was not Matt Maddox, Jack Cole based.
Jack Cole, yeah.
It was so different from my whole experience.
That's fascinating.
And I'm sure there are many other choreographers that I'm just not thinking of right now. But
Michael Bennett, was he?
Oh my gosh, Michael Bennett! I made a demi career out of auditioning for him.
Oh yeah, no kidding.
I auditioned for a Chorus Line so many times.
Oh, of course. I was running the whole time.
Oh my God! Oh, that's the story. When I was doing my first Easter show at Radio City, 1975.
Uh-huh.
Peter Gennaro comes into rehearsal one day, and he had a double lateral lisp that I don't know if I can now recreate for you. But
sweet Peter.
He would come in and say, Kidge,
Peter.
Just last night I went to see a show. It's down at Joe Papp's. It's called A Chorus Line. You got to go see it. And I always do what people tell me to do. So I went down that night, got a ticket, and saw it. And I sat there and wept my eyes out.
Oh, I bet.
This is my life.
Yes.
You know? So I saw it before it was probably frozen.
Sure.
You know, before
That's
it came
so cool.
to the Schubert.
Didn't most of you dancers know each other? The gypsies? No. I mean, was it a small
Well, a lot of us did. And by that, no, not by that point. I got to know more of the gypsies when I did the Millikan show.
Gotcha.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because
you were meeting others from other shows,
All of these. Oh, and they made fun of me.
Why?
These Millikan dance, these Broadway gypsies, they made fun of me because I warmed up all the time. I was kind of a social, I don't want to use a non-PC word.
Oh, please.
I was... I was challenged in, okay. in relation relating to people.
Got it.
So I would just
girl in the corner stretching
was,
her legs.
I was stretching and doing ballet warm up and jazz warm up and practicing pirouettes all the time, and they just made so much fun of me. Tommy Walsh, you know, in the original chorus line. Justin Ross.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, they would tease me unmercifully. Oh well.
But you got 8 Broadway shows out of it, so there you go.
That's true. Wow. That's true.
What was the last show you did on Broadway?
Well, the last show. What? Wait, we've just skipped over the most important. The longest show
did. What was your longest?
La Cage aux Folles.
Your longest was La Cage.
I went to London with Danson. Mm-hmm. When I came back, I had been offered doing some. Oh, swinging La Cage in L.A.
Okay.
And I turned Stuart Howard down, the casting director.
Yeah.
And I said, I just got back from London. I really want to work in New York. Who did I think I was, you know? So I did a little dinner theater up in Darien of Meet Me in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And then that fall, I was getting remarried. Not to the same man. Yay. Mm-hmm. right before the wedding... Stuart called me back and said, Spence, I know you don't want to swing out of town. How about swinging on Broadway? And I thought about a half a second and I said, sure.
Yeah.
And the one of the female swings in La Cage aux Folles was marrying George Hearn. And she didn't want to do the show anymore.
Oh.
And now, let me tell you, this is 1984, and if you read back, it was death. It was like Broadway was dying. There was no shows opening, and nobody was leaving any show they were in. I couldn't be, her name was Leslie. Leslie Stevens. No, not Leslie Stevens. Leslie, she became Hearn. She left the show, and so I got to be in it. And I rehearsed with Van Johnson.
Then
Van Johnson and I went into La Cage together.
Now, that's really cool.
I know. That's great.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So I was swinging, so I was covering 8 men and 4 women.
That's amazing.
Fantastic. I love that. Love that.
And it was a magnificent job. I really, really, I was physically injured. I had tendonitis in both hips from dancing on the rake stage in London doing dancing. And because of being a swing, I didn't have to perform every show. And when I went on, I didn't have to do the same kind of thing each time.
Yeah.
Like when I would do the can-can, sometimes I would do the jump splits on the left leg and sometimes on the right leg. So I was always mixing it up, you know. So I was able to heal.
Right.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's
That
intense.
Choreography on that original production is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Scott Salmon.
Scott Salmon?
Mm-hmm.
Salmon?
Salmon.
Wow.
Really, really, really good.
Very,
he was so talented.
Aerobic and, yeah.
Yeah.
Van Johnson and George Hearn, I'm assuming you got to work with them. And
yes.
then I've always heard...
Peter Marshall.
Peter from Hollywood Squares.
What?
Yes.
And Keene Curtis, right?
Keene Curtis. I got to work with him, too.
That's amazing.
Because I stayed in La Cage. I have always been committed to, you get a job, you stick with it till the end.
Yeah.
Similar, yes.
The only
yes.
show I ever left was that tour of Cats.
That was what prompted
that
you?
That tour of Cats. There's got to be a story there.
I did the third national tour. I did 20 weeks of painting my face and crawling on my knees. And then I said, that's it. I'm done. I got my unemployment claim.
I mean, the prep work beforehand must have taken so long every show.
And no one knows who you are when you come out of the stage door.
That's right.
I mean, not that I'm in it for the fame. But
there's an element of, you know, being, at least your family knows where you are and stuff.
I'm very proud that I have that credit on my resume.
Sure.
But I just could not. I was 35 years old, crawling on my hands and knees for 2.5 hours.
And which cat were you?
I was the Siamese cat, so I couldn't wear any leg warmers or knee warmers to protect. I was bruised from top to toe.
Your knees up the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But getting back to La Cage, how long was that run? I mean, how long were you in that?
Well, the show opened on Broadway in '83, and I got in November. I got in November of '83.
Mm-hmm.
No, it must have opened in '82. Anyway, I know it had been running for a year, and then I got in it, and I stayed in it until the fall of '87.
Oh.
Did you stay with it till it closed?
That's a nice long run.
Were you? I'm so curious. Were you there when they tried to put Robert Stack into the show?
Yes. Okay, now, but I'm not going to remember details. That's like a vague memory.
I had read in Arthur Lawrence's book that they brought Robert Stack in, and it wasn't working out. And he just went up to him very calmly and said, "It's not working out." And Robert Stack said, "Okay, see you later." And they parted very amicably. But it's so rare that you hear
like an Arthur Lawrence story.
No, it's not so rare that he's so calm and someone's getting fired from a major Broadway musical going, "Okay, thank you very much."
Yeah.
So I was just wondering if you had any insight onto that.
No, maybe they were paying him so much that it was fine.
That could be it.
There's always that.
And then he went off to go host Unsolved Mysteries, which was
one of my favorite shows.
What a great career he had. So what was the last Broadway show?
Teddy and Alice.
Who was Teddy?
Teddy was Len Carew.
And it was the story of?
The story of the president, Teddy Roosevelt, and his daughter, Alice. His wife had died before he was elected to the presidency. So his daughter served as the first lady, in those events.
Yeah.
And all of the music was written by John Philip Sousa.
Oh, I know very little about
this musical, actually. And they took lyrics.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. I wish I could express this well. There was a song.
So do they, I think.
Yeah, I'm excited for this.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to come up with it.
Go for it.
They took a song that was not a ballad. It was an up tune. It was a march, right?
Yeah.
It's all Sousa. And they made it a ballad.
Oh.
And it was very poignant, and I was really impressed. I was really impressed with it. But now I can't remember what it is.
It was taking John Philip Sousa's music and putting, I'm assuming, new lyrics to the music, and then changing tempos and stuff like that.
Like in my club act, I sang a little snippet of wave the flag, wave it high. Wave the flag once again.
Riveting lyrics.
That's riveting. That is brilliant. Sondheim is jealous of anything. So this sounds, once again, it sounds like a very interesting premise, except, you know historically what happens. Do you know what I mean? You know how it pans out. But what was going on?
Well, the drama of it was her need to have her own independent life.
Away from dad.
Away from dad. And I don't think that was strong enough to sustain a Broadway musical.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, grow up. Okay, get out of the house. I'm gone.
That's an interesting musical in 30 seconds.
There we go.
Now wave the flag and we'll move on with our lives.
Oh, and I just for fun, how I got that job in Teddy and Alice,
if you don't mind.
Lacage closed in November. My husband was out on the road with the Cats, Third National. And then on New Year's Day, I get a call from the dance captain of Teddy and Alice, and she's an old friend of mine. I used to replace her in show after show after show. She'd always get hired first, and then when she would leave, I would come in. And she called me, and she said, "Spence, are you available? Because we got someone leaving, and if you fit the costume, you're in."
And fit the costume.
So I ran. Get this. It was in the Minskoff Theater. So now we've come full circle.
Oh, my.
So I run down to the Minskoff. I try on the dress, and I have very broad shoulders. Uh-huh. And I knew a couple of people in the wardrobe staff. They're trying to zip me up, and they're like, "Don't worry, honey. We'll just put a gusset in."
Oh.
And I'm like, "Bless you." And so I got the job, because I knew the wardrobe people, So I rehearsed.
You know the wardrobe people.
I rehearsed for a week, and on my opening night, they posted the closing notice.
Oh.
But I did get to polka with Len Carew. For a week.
That is very cool.
That's nice. I'd like to do that.
Yeah, I think we would all like to
poke with
Len
Carew. I love him.
Yeah.
I love him. Yeah.
He's going to be a guest for us.
He is.
How exciting. Yeah. I'd love to see him again.
Oh, we'll send your love.
Oh, my gosh. Well, after that, so this was like, July, and then I get another phone call asking, I feel so blessed. Would you like to go on tour in Cats with your husband?
Would I?
When does
the business ever do that?
And we're trying to make a baby. And I'm like, right now. And so I went in and sang for the powers that be, Jeff Lee and Richard Stafford. And they put me in as Cassandra, the Siamese cat. And I did it for my 20 weeks. And then I had another gig working with Alan Johnson Alan Johnson was in the original West Side Story, and he used to do a lot of the Millikan breakfast shows. And he was choreographing a version of Can Can to go in Atlantic City.
And like the Cole Porter musical?
Yeah.
In Atlantic City.
Cheetah Rivera had toured the country at playing Pistache, the lead woman in Can Can, with the Rockettes being the Can Can girls.
What? Never heard of this.
You didn't know this tour?
Oh,
okay.
My goodness.
And so she, Cheetah, did a combination of the lead role, Pistache, with the comedian Claudine, who was the dance feature.
Right.
So they combined those characters. So she did it all. She did the dancing and the singing. Well, she didn't want to do two shows a night at Harrah's in Atlantic City. So
no, she didn't.
No, she don't need to. So they called me and asked if I would like to play Claudine. And so they re-separated the roles, you know, so now I would be doing the dance lead. And, of course, everybody in the audience thought I was a Rockette. So I was all of my interviews were about, no, I'm not a Rockette. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Of course, yeah.
But it was a wonderful experience.
Oh,
and two shows a night. And I had decided at one point in rehearsal that once we got the show up, I was going to count how many kicks we had to do in the show.
Yeah.
It was a 90-minute version of the show, no intermission, right? I counted the finale. The finale had 150 kicks in it. And I decided I couldn't face counting the entire show. So I didn't.
150 kicks in the finale.
I was in a terrific shape then.
Oh, I bet you were.
And guess what?
Still alive.
That summer I got pregnant.
Yes.
She's kicking.
That kicking paid off.
I don't know that had anything to do with it. I was exhausted.
I don't know what happened. I kicked, and that's what happened. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm Rob Schneider.
And I'm Kevin David Thomas.
And this was Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends. And today we were talking to Spence Ford. Don't forget to follow us on our Facebook page at Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends.
And on Twitter at Broadway Curtain.
Till next time, take care.
Bye.
Don't forget to tune in next week when our guest is Tony Award-winning costume designer William Ivy Long.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.